Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Good morning, Metroplex. Final hour, hump day edition.
Hump day.
Sean, RJ, and Bobby, we got Peyton and Carter in the back fist pumping to get you closer to your weekend as quickly as possible. Be careful driving out there with the nasty weather and the elements. Andrew Whitworth, the Super Bowl champion, and of course, host on Amazon, will join us at 9:20 this morning. Well, we will crosstalk with the KMC Masterpiece at 9:40. And as we get set for the big game in New Orleans, as we leave after our show on Monday, the NFL is thinking about the Mahomes rules.
Yeah, so Shefty posted this, and
he got destroyed for a Chiefs penalty tweet. He got killed in Kansas City for saying, why are you pushing this agenda that the Chiefs are getting favoritism from the league? He got roasted.
So he posted a couple of tweets here, and I'll read both of them here. So the first one was, for all those complaining that Patrick Mahomes gets too many calls, relief could soon be on the way. The replay assist is expected to expand this offseason into plays that could include the quarterback slide. All right. He follows that up the next day, yesterday, with one that says it's expected to expand into plays that could include the slide and talking about the scramble play, sliding beneath a couple of defenders, still drawing the 15-yard penalty. So they're going to expand replay into the slide and other personal fouls against the quarterback. That's going to be looked at in the offseason, whatever the competition committee meets, March, whatever.
Yeah, they meet a couple different times.
So, I mean, we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but you know, this is always, and it's the greatest of the greats find, you know, they change the rules. They changed the rules with Wilt Chamberlain, right? They expanded the key. You know, they add a three-point. They change everything. They're constantly changing for or against the greats to combat or to fix, to help the greats along. And that's maybe what they're doing here is they have to find a way to fix this. The greatest of the greats get rules changed. Sometimes in their favor, sometimes not.
You know, a lot of them get rules changed because of their dominance.
Yeah.
This is a problem with the rules, right? Shaq was dominant. Wilt was dominant. What are we going to do in the NBA about the Steph Warriors and all the threes? They just need to do this for all helmet-to-helmet shots, in my opinion. How does baseball so quick with it? Baseball does the best job of quick and fast replay, I think.
Quickest game there is, baseball. Who would have thought?
They do the best job of replay with speed. And I don't even care if it takes a while. It's too difficult for these referees. It is too tough live to judge the helmet to helmet. And they should just replay every single one for that personal foul.
I feel like I've seen this movie before with the pass interference reviews that then they never overturned them. They would always just go, nope, we got it right. No worries, guys. And it was like, okay, well, how egregious does it have to be?
Yeah.
And then they got rid of it after. I feel like this is just, we'll talk about it. That way people stop freaking out. But, I mean, even afterwards, they said, that, like, the Mahomes one where the two Texans players said, they said after the game they got it right. They're like, we even looked back and it was right.
Right.
Like, okay, well, then you're not going to overturn anything then.
Yeah, you know, the other rules that they tried to announce and never enforced, the offensive player ducking their head down, that's never called, where you're initiating the helmet-to-helmet, and then the hip drop.
Yeah, hip drop would get you, it was getting people fined regularly, but they were never flagging it.
And I knew the hip drop would be too difficult to call live. I thought.
I missed that one. I was sure we were going to see four flags a game and it was going to slow everything down.
No, I thought that you were totally against policing it.
I didn't want to police it, but that's what I'm saying. I thought when they said they were going to, I thought it was going to slow games down and they were going to throw flags for it four or five times a game.
It's hard to judge a tackle live.
Live it is. Yes.
And then you just hear helmets hit and you assume it's always the offensive player getting hit.
You can't have your eyes on everything. You know,
and this whole thing, full-time refs, I heard Dave Portnoy going off on this rant the other day, that a full-time ref doesn't change
their ability
on the helmet-to-helmet.
You need more refs. Like, that might help.
Yeah.
Get more officials out there. Like, have 11. If there is If there is 22 men on the field, have 11 officials. You watch each individual matchup. One guy is on one matchup. That's it.
The other thing that everyone's been calling for, chip in the ball. Josh Allen got screwed on the fourth down attempt. Well, why don't you just do it like tennis? And I've echoed it. We've all repeated the same exact thing. Well, someone tweeted, there are already chips in the ball. It's in the middle. This is really scientific, too nerdy and smart for me to understand. It's in the middle of the ball on the pane. Four leather panes to make up the football opposite where you inject air.
Right. So you got your four pane, right? The air inject here is on the bottom left, and then this one is on the other side on the right.
There are between 6 to 12 cameras at an event that can triangulate the position of the ball. It only works if the ball is 75% visible by light to let all the cameras see the ball and track. So the conditions have to be perfect for you, apparently, to go ahead and use that technology. The UFL and the NFL in preseason have solved one part of the puzzle, which is the measurement. You still have to place the ball based on possession down and shape. So anyway, the National Football League doesn't seem like and sound like they're way, way, way behind in terms of getting a chip in the football. It's just figuring out when they feel confident about using it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it could be an instance. The NFL has a long history of just what we say it is what it is, whether it be our officials or anybody else. And so do they necessarily, even if they have that technology, do they want to expose to consistent showing of, well, we got it wrong, got it wrong, got it wrong? I don't know that they do.
I don't know that they do either, but it's a crappy way to explain that to the teams that lose that because of a bad call.
Right, and, but they would just say human element, just like it was in baseball for years.
Right.
Yeah, it was, but when humans mattered, you know. Now we're in the AI world.
Have you considered Bassick's point in crosstalk that we should just get rid of replay?
No, I like replay. I would rather get it right more often than not.
I agree.
Yeah, you know, like if you affect one, I mean, these margins are so small in the NFL. If you impact, I'm disappointed in Bassick. Okay. As a pitcher, he knows there is a mega difference between 1-1, I'm sorry, 1-2 and 2-1. If you've got a 1-1 pitch and it's right there, it's millimeter difference, strike or ball, whereas replay would show it's a strike, but the umpire says it's a ball. As a pitcher, you are in a completely different position.
But we're not getting replays for that right now.
No, they might eventually. They might eventually, right. It's going to happen. But there's such a massive
difference.
There's such a massive difference between 1-2 and 2-1. I mean, 2-1, my guess is, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, I've seen them, but my guess is the batting average around the sport on a 2-1 pitch is probably over 320. And on a 1-2 pitch, I would bet it's no higher than 230. I mean, I think you're looking at a 100-point difference in batting average.
All right, Jerry Jones is getting a lot of insults and comparisons thrown his way of being, you know, Al Davis and the new Dan Snyder. ESPN, I ate this up. I could not read this fast enough. ESPN went inside how Dan Snyder views the Commanders' run this year, and the headline is, he hates it. Absolutely hates it. So apparently the Snyders, they just ran off to London. They had their house up for sale. They overvalued it. They ended up giving it away to a charity so that it could help be a tax write-off. Dan Snyder tried to bail on the Commanders' sale at the very last second.
I got the key to the stadium. You're not getting in.
Yeah.
What an ass.
He said he had the key to the stadium, so it'd be trespassing.
It'd be trespassing. I'm going to put you in jail.
And then he came up with this story of telling the other owners he had a drinking problem and now he's sober. So when he acted all crazy and was involved with the scandals, it was because of drinking and alcohol, and now he got off of that. Meanwhile, the rest of the story says, like, he's on his yacht drinking wine and going out to pubs. He loves living in London pubs. So he's going to, you know, make up this story to try to get other owners to stop forcing him to sell. And the other owners were like, no, we want you out. We hate you. We can't stand you. You have to go. But Snyder at the very end was trying to hang on. Nope, I'm changing my mind. I'm not going to do it. I'm not giving them the bank information. I'm not giving them my bank information. Eventually he did. And, oh, by the way, they tagged on a $60 million fine for that accusation at the end that he was not revenue sharing.
Yeah.
So they fined him $60 million, and he was hot. He was heated.
He sounds like a real treat. He sounds like just one of the really somebody you like to have at a party.
In October 22, ESPN reported Snyder told close associates he had dug up dirt on Roger Goodell and other owners, including Jerry Jones, and told a close associate he would use it to blow up those who forced him to sell. Quote, they can't F with me. When it came to Snyder's nearly quarter century partnership in the NFL, Jerry Jones simply said for this article, quote, it was time for a divorce. Oh, just like they said about Mike McCarthy the other day. Magic Johnson, what does it take? He's part of the new ownership group. New vision, new owner with a strategy, picking the right people. Then we all step out of the way and let them do their jobs. Talent, culture, and people. So Snyder is jealous and angry and ticked off and absolutely hates what the Commanders did this year.
Yeah, it's that's small and petty. You're a billionaire of billionaires.
I don't know, man. I mean, is it? Wouldn't you feel the same way?
Oh,
they kicked you out of the league and they go to the NFC Championship. You wouldn't be like, yay!
Well, it depends. Like, if he just bought it to buy, but he was a Commanders fan before, right?
Dude, that's the thing about his.
Yeah, he was.
His fall is insane. Like, if you look at, like, he was the youngest CEO of a company on the New York Stock Exchange. He was this, you know, grinder who got all this money and was really successful and then buys the Commanders or the Redskins at the time really early when he's still really, what was he? He was 32 when he bought them. I mean, he was super young and he was this big fan. He was initially thought of those first couple years. It was like, he was almost kind of like the NFL's Mark Cuban. Just like, I'll spend, I'm a fan, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And it's wild how he just turned to become like a Donald Sterling-like figure by the end. It's just, he became something completely different by the end.
Please clarify and confirm if he owned a team at 32. Can you imagine? No way. No way.
You're not psychologically even ready.
He was 34.
Oh my God. Could you imagine owning a sports team at 34? How impossible you'd be?
I would.
We talk about being Johnny Manziel. No, that's nothing compared to this.
That's nothing because you're you know, to be an owner, like you had to learn. You know, you're. He's well, I guess the owner it wouldn't, of a team before he even knows how to run his own life.
I guess it wouldn't be nothing compared, like, because you're not walking around treated like a rock star, like the college quarterback.
Right.
You're not as known, as recognized, but the power trip you'd be on.
I don't think you could be a really effective CEO until you've already gone through your midlife crisis.
And then speaking of the controversy and the Davis comparisons, Mark Davis.
Mark Davis.
Is bringing in Pete Carroll, talking about Chucky.
So this was after the press conference. It was in what looked to be their team meeting room. All these stadium seating chairs behind him. And he was talking about wanting a real, true football guy. That's what they got with Tom.
Bringing in Tom Brady was bringing in somebody that was on the football side that I had been lacking having here at the organization. Back in, I guess it was 18, with John Gruden. He was somebody that I brought in and really expected to be that person on the football side that would bring stability to the organization. He had a 10-year contract and all that, and his head was chopped off. And we were put in a really bad position as an organization.
So he's kind of getting, like, grilled for saying that. Because it's like, well, I mean, he kind of did it himself.
Well, no, he's always defended Gruden.
Right.
And he hates that Snyder hates he was forced to sell. Mark Davis, if he had his wishes, would still have Gruden as the coach.
Yeah.
He feels that he was wronged and screwed over.
He does feel that way.
Makes it seem like he's excusing Gruden's emails and what he said.
Yeah, like, look.
So, yeah, he should be getting criticized.
If you want to run your company where, like, you know what, we offer second chances to everybody. Everybody makes a mistake, whatever. That's fine. You know, that's your organization. Run it how you want. Then fight for him. Like, just tell the NFL, no, this is my. I'm not firing him. This is my organization. But the moment you relented, you gotta let it go. You gotta drop it.
Probably didn't have much of a choice.
Yeah, I mean,
but what are they gonna do? Kick him out? I mean, he's a Davis.
Like, what are you gonna do? I'll call the police. It's trespassing. Same sort of situation. They were gonna take it from Dan Snyder. There was a same sort of thing. They were coming for Gruden, and there wasn't much Mark Davis was probably gonna be able.
But you
to
know
do
what I mean? Like, they Mark Davis, the Davis family, the Jones family, the Maras, like, they are the NFL. Like, you're not going to take the Raiders from the Davis family.
Let's talk Cowboys and Brian Schottenheimer along with the Super Bowl with Andrew Whitworth. The big fella joins us live on Sean and RJ next. The 100th annual East-West Shrine Bowl going to be played at AT&T Stadium on Thursday, January 30th. That is tomorrow. Tickets are available at ShrineBowl.com. And Andrew Whitworth is part of the 2025 Hall of Fame class alongside Eddie George. And Andrew is joining us now on the Home of the Cowboys with Sean, RJ, and Bobby on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Good morning, man. Congratulations. How have you been?
Good morning, fellas. I'm doing great, man. It's good to be back in this game. Shoot, it had to be 19 years ago, I guess, or something that I played in this thing. So it'll be fun to be back and kind of have some of those memories.
Take us through some of the memories. Like, who did you compete against? You know, some of the practices where you're like, okay, this is a measuring stick moment for me right here against this big prospect or this big name.
Yeah, I think you think of those moments. I mean, just how nervous you are. It's your first, interview, if you will, or audition for playing sports at the highest possible level, something you've dreamed to do your entire life. So I can remember probably less of those moments of actual competition and more of the standing around with other guys and the nerves you had and the conversations you're having about what does your agent say about this and what has this team said to you? You know, just all those things. We're all just speculating where you might go and what might happen next. But also form some relationships that I'll, always remember. I mean, Bruce Gronkowski is a guy that I can remember from that game and ended up playing with him later in years. Marquise Colston, Greg Jennings and some other guys that just some cool names that, throughout the years you end up playing with some of those guys. And you'll always have that memory of really that time you were all together and you had no idea what your future would look like. And you're just giving your best effort in front of these coaches in a big moment.
Did you know going into that, you had the belief, I know I'm a really good player. I know I can play in the NFL. Or did you have to have a lot of other proven moments once you got into the league in order to know that you belonged?
Yeah, I think once you get in the league, you have those moments that kind of help you, show you that you belong. I think that week is a little more of probably trying to figure out where you stand, with the group that's coming in and what your level of play is and possibilities are. And also, I think, too, some of the guys who might not have played a lot of the pro game or played styles in the sense of what you're going to play in the pros, some of those coaches, because they're coming from the NFL to help coach, they're kind of putting you in those scenarios and putting you in more things that are going to look more like what a real football play in the NFL is going to look like. And maybe even, hey, here's what winning and losing at this level looks like compared to college. And so you're getting a little feel of the standard that you're going to be expected to practice at and what it's going to look like. Because sometimes in college, it may not be as competitive at some schools compared to that when you're going against the best of the best, which is what an NFL practice is going to look like from a competition standpoint every snap.
Andrew Whitworth joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Okay, Andrew, you mentioned when you were standing out there and just the nerves that you felt, just, I'm going to have my first meeting with a team or the way these practices are, and you still feel a little, I guess, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed at that moment. In this newer era where we see guys like Jaden Daniels who will skip certain workouts or Marvin Harrison or guys who show up to Shrine where it's like, well, I'm going to show up, but I'm not going to practice, and I'm just going to interact with people. How much do you think the culture has changed in terms of the new NFL player because of the NIL era?
I think it's changed a lot. And I think when you think about now what the league is and even the college game, it's totally different than anything I experienced. And really for me to even speak to really that NIL world, I wouldn't know anything about it. But, back in my day, it just involved cash envelope, guys. that was a whole different thing. I would say now it's totally different, and the expectations are different, too. I think these guys, they play a lot. We see them play. The exposure in college football is night and day different. And I think, to me, it doesn't bother me that much, some of these guys that have proven themselves and feel like they're comfortable with who they are and what they've shown. But I also think it's good for them to go that week, be around, say hey to the guys, get to meet people and do those interviews. Because you're really, when you get to the next level, you better know the talent and the skill level. You may just be checking off some boxes at these practices and just kind of seeing how they compete and stuff. But you're worried about the human. I mean, you want to know who the human being is, what drives them, what makes them tick, how they're built, how they interact around their buddies. I think it's good to be able to see some of that with other teammates and some of the other guys there, how they interact, because it's going to show you a little bit of what they'll be like in the NFL. Because I think sometimes we forget about that. In the NFL, all 53 guys on that roster were the dude in college. They were the guy. And so they have an ego. They have confidence in who they are and how they carry themselves. And then when you put all those dudes in the same room, that's why you see locker rooms in the NFL that have good cultures and others that don't. And so it's good to see some of these kids in those scenarios with some other alphas and see how they act and see how they adapt to it.
Whit, what was your reaction when you heard the Cowboys were hiring Brian Schottenheimer?
You know, obviously it heard whispers that it was possible. Obviously shocked like everybody else that was, really at the end of the day, their final decision, but not crazily shocked only because it felt like really how the process went from the beginning. This was not going to be a normal candidate that you would have thought of because they didn't really, they didn't make a decision to end the season. And then it delayed into past the time to interview some of those top candidates that week that they were on the bye. So then you're like, all right, well, you didn't even do your due diligence, really. So truth is, this is going to be kind of an awkward hire situation anyways, unless you're waiting until all this is over and you can get to all those guys again. It kind of felt like it was something where they had a little bit of an idea of where they might go if McCarthy wasn't the answer. And then on the flip side of it, I love Shoddy, and all the times I've gotten to be around him, he's a great human being. I can see why Dak loves him a lot. I can see why maybe to them they feel like there's this, if you will, like an opportunity to build like a culture and a character, to a vibe to their team that's a little different than maybe they've had in the past. Because he's a guy that, man, he is going to wear his emotions. He's going to have a blast. He's going to create a fun environment. They're going to compete. And I think we can't judge it until we get an opportunity to see what this guy looks like with his shot. Because I know players across the league, organizations that I've been around where he's been, they love Brian Schottenheimer and they think he's an awesome human being. And I think that's a good place to start in this league, this day and age, because we see a lot of the time these relationships these coaches have sound like some of the most important parts of their level of going and getting success.
Andrew Whitworth joining us here on the D&M Leasing Hotline. You were in the West with him in Seattle, right? Like you competed against when he was on that staff.
Yes, and then he was also, at one time with the Rams, and so a lot of people that were carryover from that, group that are still there were around him and have shared nothing but great things about him. And, and obviously Richard Sherman, who, I got to do Thursday Night Football with every week during the season, was around Shoddy too. So I mean, a lot of guys that, they think a lot about him and have always – walked away, enjoying being around him as a coach. And I think that's the first place to start. And who he looks like as a head coach, we have no idea, because here's the reality, guys. I mean, we see coordinators get hired all the time that we think are absolute insane coordinators at whatever they do, and they're a disaster as a head coach, and they're not good leaders, and they're not all these things. So who are we to say that just because we don't know the level of this guy when he's a head coach that we know what it looks like? And maybe when he's in a head coach position and gets to do things the exact way he wants to do it, maybe he's got a mind frame and a headset that he creates something that's a really good opportunity for them to be successful and lays out a plan that the players buy into. And so to me, I think it's going to be great to give him a shot. Yeah, is it what we all expected, the way we all thought it would go? Do we feel like the Cowboys did the best they can absolutely do? No. But do I think Brian Schottenheimer deserves his opportunity? And am I going to give him his chance to show us what he's capable of? Heck yeah. I'm excited to see it because I know the human's an awesome dude, and I look forward to seeing him take his shot and see what he's got.
A criticism of Shoddy and those Seattle offenses were being conservative, like too old school with Pete and running the ball too much. Did you think of that while you were playing them? And what do you think of that criticism for Cowboy fans who are scared of him calling this offense?
Well, I think you've got a guy in Dak Prescott who's shown your ability to throw the football and honestly has been, a part of some great offenses over the last few years. So they're going to be able to throw the football effectively. They have a great receiver in CeeDee Lamb. Like being able to complete and connect on those opportunities is not going to be hard for them with those two guys. So, first and foremost, and that's where you start with your best players. But when you look at the system, I mean, look where we are. I mean, I would say that in those years that we're talking about, that was a little bit of a different league, and offenses were molding into more throwing the ball. And you look at really where we are now, we're actually headed the other direction. And some of the best teams in the league run the football extremely well, or if they don't, they've got a really dynamic quarterback who also uses his legs and creates and those kind of things. So I think when you look at Dak Prescott, some of his best years in the NFL have been when he's using his legs out of the pocket as a thrower, when he's able to use his legs to get out of the pocket. So now you start developing this run game and marrying it to your pass game where you enter some play action, some boots, some rolls, some of the things Dak did early in his career and was really successful. I don't see any reason why he won't be successful in that. And I think that's one of the reasons they did it, is that Dak and his relationship's really strong. And I just think this league, if you look across it, the teams that were the most successful, the NFC North is one of our best divisions in football. What did all those teams do? They ran the crap out of the football. And the Detroit Lions, you know, obviously, Green Bay Packers. Then you look at Philadelphia, where they're at. You look at what really the Commanders, when they were at their best, what they're able to do is run the football. So I think, to me, look, the league has changed. And if he can continue to evolve that offense, I think it's going to look a little different with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb involved instead of Russell Wilson. But I don't see why that can't be successful, because to me, I look around it and go, man, there's some teams that I wish they ran it more right now, because I think they'd have more success.
When you got to L.A., it was also McVay's first year, and he had never been a head coach. And, you know, the going from an assistant to a head coach, learning how to run a team, learning the culture, learning how to be a leader. How different was McVay first year versus how he grew into that and his ability to lead and stuff?
I would say this. Somebody who's biased in this conversation, but I would say that people have been around him, you know, now that he's had an opportunity to have so many daggone people leave the organization to become head coaches. Sean McVay is a pretty much in that category of a unicorn of those kind of guys. I would put him in a rare situation. He's been an insane, incredible leader from the second he started, but like, I put Sean McVay in the conversation of somebody who was literally born and created to be the CEO or head guy of anything. Like, Sean could walk in any company in the world and be the leader of the company. Like, that's just who he is, how he's wound, his ability to communicate, articulate his plan, his vision, to grab the attention of everybody in the room, yet also be entertaining and inspiring and challenging, is just it's a very, very rare level. And so to me, I think there's going to be some challenges. Obviously, things Sean had to learn over time, and it was more things like he had to navigate within himself of how to handle things emotionally, how to handle react to things, how to move forward and make decisions. That's that head coaching role that we forget. That's why we see these coordinators struggle, because when you're the head coach, it's not about calling plays. It becomes about all the other mess. I mean, you are literally putting out fires, trying not to let fires get started all throughout the building, with personalities, with things going on with their families, with contract situations, with who's not getting the ball, who is, you know, who's getting to play, who's not, you know, somebody else in the building doesn't even have to do with football that's affecting football. I mean, that's your life. So it is a different position, and it requires different traits to be able to handle it really well.
Andrew Whitworth, the Super Bowl champ, joining us on behalf of the East-West Shrine Bowl. He is getting inducted along with Eddie George to the Hall of Fame here on 105.3 The Fan. I'm hearing a little bit of the Wes Monroe come out in some of these answers. Is it true that you all don't believe anyone outside of the state can cook crawfish? And B, where do we need to go in New Orleans when we head out there for the Super Bowl Monday?
Man, listen, there's going to be plenty of good opportunities to go places in New Orleans when you get there. Just find your local po' boy shop and go get you a couple fried shrimp po' boys. That's the first thing I'll be doing when I get there. I promise you that. But, you know, it comes out, especially when I get down there. Listen, all my friends that know me in L.A. and in California and then Thursday Night Football and everything else, they're going to be shocked when we get down there. My voice will immediately change when I get in New Orleans. All the slang will start to come out. So, yeah, I'm getting close, just getting antsy thinking about it. So I can't wait, man. It's going to be a great week. New Orleans is an awesome host city for the Super Bowl. We're going to have a blast.
Is it true that I'm talking to a fellow great youth tennis champion, RJ?
I saw that. I don't know what 6'7", 300 pounds looks like on a tennis court, though.
No way.
Well, you got to remember now, I was a tight end in high school, so I always give credit to Nick Saban. He's the one he was the first coach to actually be honest with me. He said, listen, you ain't playing tight end in college or the NFL. You're going to be a left tackle for a really long time as soon as you realize that. So that's how I changed positions. But to go to that story, fantastic. It's one of those things when you're in college, they're asking you for something for your bio, for the East-West Shrine game or for the combine, you know, to kind of say that you're a multi-sport athlete. I may have alluded to I won a championship. What I meant was I won like a tournament. And, you know, unfortunately, it's one of those things the sports director put in the bio. People kind of took it everywhere. Listen, guys, it became I was like a high school state champion in tennis by a couple years in my career. I'm like, I got to stop this whole narrative. I won the local tennis club's like 9 and 10 year old tennis tournament one summer. And they gave me a Little Caesars like Bigfoot pizza to myself. That's the only thing I won. I wasn't a tennis champion by any means, other than getting to eat pizza and enjoy my favorite Pepsi.
But you are my age, so you had to have picked, and I guarantee I know your answer. Were you Agassi or Sampras?
Oh, I was Agassi. I'm left handed. Come on, baby. Wild Thing. The Wild Thing racket. Let's go, baby.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Andrew Whitworth joining us here on 105.3 The Fan. Thank you so much for the time, man. We really appreciate it. Love having you on, and congratulations, and enjoy everything happening out there at AT&T.
Hey, appreciate it, fellas. It's going to be a great week.
See you soon in New Orleans. Andrew Whitworth on the D&M Leasing Hotline. Let's crosstalk with the K&C Masterpiece next.
We go back the other way. Johnston got it across. Empty net. A hat-trick goal in overtime, and the Stars, they get the come-from-behind victory.
ESPN Plus with a call, 4-3 in Vegas, but Miro Heiskanen had to be helped off the ice in the third after the knee buckled. First time all year, the Stars won a game in which they trailed after two periods. Good morning to the K&C Masterpiece. Yeah. You look like you had something to say.
Well, his knee buckled because freaking Mark Stone, I think, tripped him. And then everyone's like, oh, I didn't do it on purpose. Great. That doesn't help my concern about Miro.
Spittle said Stars Twitter was not happy.
Oh, I mean,
is that
I
the Mark Stone that was injured like most of a season?
Yeah, he's already shown he's alive.
Showed up out of nowhere.
And they magically were able to subvert the salary cap, which I kind of oddly sort of respect.
Yeah, I do have a
buddy was there at the game. A buddy Wesley was at the game last night out in Vegas. He's out there, and I've not heard from him because he's probably hammered still.
It was a sweet win. Like, we talked about Vegas. You had the two games, and was it St. Louis that was wedged in between that DeSmith had the shutout? Get 4 points out of those three, and they got all six. And so, obviously, that's great, especially since Winnipeg is heating up. I was going to ask you if you'd ever seen the movie Flashdance.
No.
I think I have. I think I have.
Yeah. So that movie sucks.
No, it's awesome.
I watched it last night, and Jennifer Beals, let me get this out of the way. Jennifer Beals, she's great in that movie.
So hot.
The music is awesome. The rest of the plot is really, really stupid. And I was shocked to learn that it was up for 4 Academy Awards.
I was a big fan of her in The L Word, too.
Why is any of this relevant?
She's a beautiful young woman who works a day job in a steel mill. All right,
she's a welder.
You watched this yesterday?
That's right.
Okay. All right. So that's why.
I mean, it's sexier than a construction working girl.
It's not really relevant. Just sometimes I just like to chat with you, Sean.
She wants to get into a prestigious dance academy.
She does. But those stuffy dance people, she thinks are going to be too rigid for her. And then, well, I can't tell you what happens. But if you watch the first 5 minutes and the last 5 minutes, you pretty much got the gist of the movie.
I want a girl who can weld.
There's a movie that I love that every time it's on, I'm too scared to watch it because I'll get that too old school, outdated movie effect like Tombstone. Like Tombstone, I feel like I see the cardboard props on the set.
If you watch it in HD, you can. And widescreen.
And the movie that I loved back in the day, and I'm too scared, I don't want to ruin my memory of it, is Backdraft. I'll still randomly see Backdraft on the guide, and I'm like, wow, they're still replaying that? They still show that movie?
I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Oh! Yeah.
Was there a movie that you knew was so bad, but you watched it every time it was on?
So.
Regardless of if
anything with Brandon Fraser?
Oh, like the Mummies?
Or
the
Encino Man?
Encino Man. Oh, gosh.
That movie's awesome.
It was Lake Placid for me.
Is he in that?
No, it was that was the movie. It was the crocodile movie in Maine.
Biodome. Yeah, that's the one.
Biodome.
It's stupid, but I love it.
Yeah, Backdraft does not hold up, by the way. It looks really, like, lame when you watch it back now.
See, I think mine was Rookie of the Year.
Because, oh, yeah, that's great. Like,
now you find it unbelievable.
Pitcher's got a big
I mean, but like, I was that age. And of
Angels
course,
in
I
the outfield
thoughts.
Ruined for me.
Yeah. The most unbelievable part of Rookie of the Year, though, is when Rowan Gardner throws the ball back from the stands. They attempt to make a tag at home plate as if that ball is once again live because somebody threw it back from the stands.
You didn't have a bigger issue with like the granny shot pitch he throws at the end, or it was just the ball was out of play?
You can look up plenty of pitches of Ephus pitches that threw hitters off. Thank you very much.
Corey, what's coming up?
Inside details on the Rangers Sports Network. We discussed that immediately, right out of the gate. And where do the Mavs sit in the NBA trade tiers at 10:20?
Bobby, tell us about your long weekend that starts after the show.
Okay, well, I can't specify what yet potentially I'm going to be leaving for, but I will be, because I don't know if they're in the car and it's supposed to be a surprise. But I am supposed to be leaving this afternoon, and I will be driving out of town, and then tomorrow is the Shrine Bowl, which I had agreed to work for NFL Network a while back. And I had missed the last NFL Network gig that I was supposed to do because I got sick. Well, now that we've got this double booked, I don't really want to tell them a second time, can't do it. Yeah. So, because at that point they'll just go, well, we'll start hiring other people who are consistently available. So I am driving back to work the Shrine Bowl and then driving back out of town tomorrow to then finish the rest of the weekend out of town.
Long ways away.
Okay.
4.5 hour drive towards the Gulf of America.
And then coming back within.
And then going back.
And then going
within,
back.
Within 12 hours.
Yeah, I will be driving like, yeah, I mean, it's going to be 18 hours of driving over the course of like
did
4
you just,
days.
Did you check, the price on like a last minute flight?
No, because to me, it's like you got to be at the airport by a certain time and it's going to be, you're not going to get any wiggle room on what time it leaves. So I just rather get in the car, pick when I leave and go.
I do kind of get the convenience of that. Are you a good driver in terms of like
the best?
Okay, but I meant in terms of like, do you do well on these longer trips?
Yeah, I mean, I was.
You know how many podcasts he probably has lined up? He's got Brian Schottenheimer's.
It's Collision Low Crossers.
You should listen to terrestrial radio.
I'm going to until I lose the signal. Okay. But then after I lose the signal, then I'm going to listen to Collision Low Crossers, which was the. Like a reporter who had been embedded with the 2011 Jets, and there's a lot of stuff in there about Schottenheimer, so I'm just going to refresh on it and save it.
Man, that's some good prep right there.
Have you guys done any homework on spots in New Orleans yet? Corey, I usually rely on you for this.
I mean, I've gone to a couple places that I've liked that I've already been to. Like, we'll probably go to Galatoire's. Adrienne is going for 2 nights. So she's flying in with us on Monday, and then she's leaving Wednesday. So she's gonna, but other than that, so I might miss the media party. I don't want another last year.
Yeah,
but I gotta be up an early Tuesday morning to get with you guys on the show, so I'll be up early on Tuesday with y'all.
Did that schedule come out?
But Galatoire's, Antoine's is a fantastic restaurant, huge, and it's got a lot of history, and like when we went, we stayed in the Queen's Treasure Room. Didn't stay there, we
that does
ate
sound
there.
Pretty fancy.
Yeah, they actually, like, they have there's stuff that the Queen had sent over here, all sorts of crazy stuff, so that's a really cool place if you want to see some history. Yeah. Frenchman Street is where we go for the music.
That's Queen Anne. Was it the Queen Mother? Queen Elizabeth?
I was kind of drunk at the time.
Queen Victoria? Big fan of Victoria.
You can say there's a lot of history about everything in New Orleans because there's nothing new
Orleans. They don't build new things. You can't tear a building down and put a new
one
up.
What about after Katrina?
The law is you have to renovate. You just renovate what's inside. So they want to keep that history.
They want to keep it old so it still looks like.
What about you?
What in the world do you think I would have to contribute to this?
What do you think, Kevin?
Kevin's going to go to...
Where do they have the
land? Is there a certain place to land?
Where are the chicken tenders?
I would do that.
He's
going to
find Popeye's.
Where are the chicken tenders?
I'm not even saying for food. I mean spots.
You can see Cirque du Soleil in like every New Orleans alley, basically.
I'm going to watch an unauthorized alley.
Preservation Hall's dope. That's a dope little place to go to. It's the crappiest little thing you've ever seen. Like, seriously. Two fans in there as the air conditioning.
Two fans.
But they played the best. Like, that's the best music right there. The best jazz music.
Okay.
I'm gonna eat whatever is in the casino. Whatever sandwich I can get in the casino.
That's right. We gambled there.
There's no redeeming qualities to any of the things in New Orleans.
Is that Harrah's?
I'm going to try to do more stuff with the team. Still. I think in Vegas, I did not do a good job of that, as Sean alluded to. I went to multiple Cirque du Soleil's
entire career.
No. Maybe.
Did you come to the dinner? Were you at that dinner?
He was not.
No.
I wasn't.
I know the reason to go to that dinner, and I almost did.
Who attends less things between him or Dawson?
I attend more things than Dawson.
Recently it has been Hagee's attended less.
Less?
The last couple trips it has been Hagee's.
All right. I just told you I'm making a concerted effort to fix that.
Because you don't eat oysters.
I can't.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not excited about that part of the trip. This is like a seafood city.
How are you going to eat in any restaurant that also cooks seafood? Yeah.
I'm going to be eating at the hotel, like little lobby snack shack all week, probably.
They make seafood there, too.
This does not feel like a morning show together trip. This is going to feel...
Because I want oysters, but you can't eat them, and he won't.
But you can go.
You can go.
They serve seafood. They serve other seafood.
Yeah, you can go.
You know, but you're going to be in the casino.
Well,
I don't want to try to see the restaurants. Bobby won't eat in seafood restaurants, so...
Can you block out a gambling time and we'll gamble with you?
I can absolutely block out a time.
Yeah, or we'll support your gamble.
Will you gamble?
Yeah, I like to gamble.
Yeah! Oh,
all right.
It's going to be me and Hagee's trip.
Yeah.
But also Daily Fantasy with Underdog's a really good place.
Which is not gambling. Thank you very much.
We gambled there last time.
We did. Yes, that's where...
Brandon Tierney, BT.
BT got into the fight with the dealer.
Who? What?
What?
Yeah. I'll tell you the story.
Okay.
I'll tell you the story.
He's not listening.
What kind of dealer?
There's also a little bar.
Blackjack dealer.
At the Roosevelt Hotel that I think you might want to dip into. They have a great Sazerac.
Huh?
Is that the haunted one? I would want to go to like a haunted place or a cemetery. I didn't do that.
We didn't do that last time. We just took the whole, like we went into all the areas that got affected by Katrina and checked that out, but we didn't do that. Oh, Mike.
I'd be in on that.
Hey, Mike, nice polo.
Wow,
dude.
What a company, man.
That looks good on you.
What timing with the Rangers TV network whatever they're announcing.
Do you have
a meeting for it today?
2:00.
Oh, okay.
So you're leaving the show today?
To say that.
At like 1:30?
No, I don't know. Dump that.
you might actually want to dump that.
I'm really not sure. The KMC Masterpiece for a little bit is next on The Fan.